Chapter 3.
Sir? Smythe stood in the doorway to my office, looking a bit more stiff and formal than typical. Than what was typical for him recently, I mean. Early in our relationship, he was always rigidly observant of protocol toward me. Over the past couple years, he had relaxed a bit. My sense was he originally was making an extra effort to show respect to a commander who got promoted as a publicity stunt. His demonstration of respect made a big difference in how the merry band of pirates viewed me until I was able to prove myself. Hopefully, I had proven to be a competent leader, although some people might think the jury was still out on that issue.
Come in, come in.
I waved to him, mumbling over a mouthful of crackers that was my lunch. There was not a meeting with the star leader on my calendar, and he rarely just dropped by to chat.
What's up?
That was my attempt to be less formal. He sat down, looking like he would prefer to be standing. His back remained ramrod straight, not relaxing at all.
Sir, I believe you should reconsider racing directly to rescue our people on Globacus.
Damn, why can't my brain think of something intelligent to say when I need to? I am concerned we could be flying into an ambush. He was being diplomatic by not saying another ambush, like the one I jumped us into in the snow cone star system. If you wanted to count, the first ambush I'd stumbled us into was a Theranan destroyer squadron during our second mission, so I didn't have a great track record at avoiding ambushes.
Okay. Do you have any specific information that leads you to...
I don't trust the spiders. He didn't often interrupt me. That got my attention. Shit. That's the value of having an experienced team. The idea that the Rindaloo might be trying to screw us had not even crossed my mind. That was stupid of me. I am not the most trusting person in the galaxy, yet the spiders offer juicy information on a platter, and I hadn't questioned their motives.
Okay, yeah. Good point, I conceded.
But, other than that, what makes you think this is a setup?
There are several factors that concern me. Access to Globacus is provided by only one wormhole, and that wormhole can be reached from only one other wormhole, without a very long flight.
Right. That's one of the reasons Zhao approved supporting the Verds for the op. It's isolated and difficult to reinforce. They should be able to consolidate control of the rock before the lizards outside that star system even know what happened.
Correct. However, there is only one escape route from Globacus.
The closest wormhole is also unusual, in that the emergence points are all clustered across less than a tenth of a light year. According to Skippy, fewer than 7% of all active wormholes have their figure-8 emergence tracks confined to such a compact zone, he reminded me. A sphere one-tenth of a light-year across is an unimaginably vast area for poor human brains to comprehend. The Rindaloo, or perhaps the two senior species working together, could blockade that wormhole without tasking a major portion of their fleets to the mission.
Shit. I knew he was right. Shit! I slapped my desk. Damn it! Now that he mentioned it, the warning of hidden Bosphorok warships at Globacus was a little too convenient.
Not convenient for the Verd Chris, if the spiders were telling the truth and the Verd landing force was seriously screwed. Maybe the spiders were telling the truth, and the presence of the bird brains was part of the setup. If I saw a bunch of Bosphorok warships orbiting the planet bombarding the landing force, I wouldn't ask too many questions before jumping right into the fight. And maybe right into the middle of a whole lot of stealth senior species warships that were waiting for me to do something stupid.
Skippy, is the info right about that wormhole?
Yes, he sighed. I never included the narrow pattern of the emergence in the briefing documents because I didn't think it was relevant.
Is it?
Unfortunately, Colonel Smythe is right. It is a risk to us. If all we had to worry about was a blockade attempt by second-tier species, I wouldn't worry about it. But the spiders or kiddies could trap us on the Globacus end of that wormhole. It would require a major effort, and we could just wait them out, except... Assuming they are serious about the effort, they could establish a major staging and support base in a star system near the other end of the wormhole and cycle ships in and out. They could sustain a blockade for years, if necessary. Of course, we could just hang out and chill if that happens.
Ooh!
It would give me time to work on my opera. So there's the silver lining in that cloud. The cloud's lining is dark as a black hole, I muttered. Hey, you jerk, I should...
Could you adjust that wormhole? Make it open at a location not on the scheduled route?
No can do, Joe. Sorry. That wormhole is on a network I have screwed with too often. Maybe the network would do what I ask. Maybe it won't. Crap. That's too big a risk. Okay, let's think about this. Smythe, you have any ideas? Leaving the Verge to get torn apart there is not an option. He knew my main concern was for the roughly 500 humans who had joined the Verge for the assault on Globacus in a sort of reverse alien legion arrangement. He knew my real concern was for Dave Chaika. We need to send a recon force through before we commit to transitioning through the wormhole. I knew what he meant. The Dutchman? That ship is our best recon platform. Crap. Okay, you're right. I tapped a button on my laptop, contacting the bridge. Colonel Meme? I called the duty officer. General? Change of plans. We're going to Clopeth first. Tell the pilots to plot a new course. There was a brief pause.
Sir, that means going back to the wormhole we just came through?
He said it as a question. I know. We don't have a choice. The Legion op at Clopeth had been halted, then canceled after our navy was attacked by a combined force of Maxulks and Rindaloo warships. Valkyrie destroyed most of the enemy force with the help of a relativistic dart, but Zhao and Ross agreed with what Perkins told me. Further Legion operations had to be suspended until the threat of direct intervention by the senior species could be dealt with. When we left, to try the greatest bluff of all time, dropships were pulling Legion troops off the surface, along with as many Ruha civilians as our transport ships could hold. The plan was for the Navy to pull back to Fob Jaguar for repairs as soon as possible. The good news was Zhao had brought 5-star carriers to Clopeth, including one we recently acquired from the Ethics and Compliance Office, and those vulnerable space trucks remained far outside the star system. So there was plenty of transport capacity available. At least one star carrier would need to jump in near the planet to take aboard our damaged ships, and that was a risk the Navy had to take. Chang had stayed behind with the Flying Dutchman to support the Navy in any way he could. Unless a miracle had occurred, the Navy would still be at Clopeth. If they weren't there, then we would have to chase them all the way back to the Jaguar wormhole, because there were multiple routes the Navy could use to get back to base. Zhao might even divide his force to fly different routes, reducing the risk of his entire force being attacked along the way. The senior species had more important things to worry about, and were very unlikely to harass a relatively small group of ships, but Zhao didn't know that. All we could do was get to Clopeth as quickly as possible and hope we found the Dutchman there. And hope there wasn't another problem we had to deal with. Dave Chaika and Jaitz and the others would have to hold out a bit longer. I felt sick about it.
Captain!
The communications officer called out to be heard over the low-level chaos on the bridge of the UN destroyer Boston.
Captain Duchamp wants a conference in 5.
Derek Bonsu looked around the bridge of the ship. His ship. Everyone was doing their jobs. They didn't need him looking over their shoulders.
XO!
He nodded to his executive officer who was studying a damage control report.
I have the ship, sir, the man said without looking up.
Keep it in one piece, please,
Derek said as he waited for the bridge door to open. Its mechanism was slower than it should be, one maintenance item that had fallen to the bottom of the to-do list. When the ship was preparing to go into a planned combat operation, there was plenty of time to close and lock the door to prevent a sudden pressure loss caused by enemy fire. But if the ship was attacked unexpectedly, a balky door mechanism could be fatal. He didn't want to add to the burdens of the ship's engineering team or the workload of the bots controlled by the AI, but the sticky door did need to be addressed at some point. Maybe he could pitch in if it wasn't too complicated, and if he had time. Boston had been in continuous action since before the assault was launched at Globacus and had been engaged in intense action from the moment a Therenan task force appeared out of nowhere. Where the hell had those ships come from? Derek asked himself for the 100th time. In one way, it didn't matter where the enemy ships had come from. It only mattered that they were there, were denying the UN force access to orbit. In another way, it did matter where the Theranin had come from, because it meant there was something very, very wrong with the intel provided to the invasion force. With the intel provided by Skippy, who supposedly was magnificent. "Asshole," Derek muttered under his breath when he thought of the beer can AI. The fight in orbit had been quick and nasty. The assault carrier Chesapeake Bay was crippled in the first few seconds, with her escort Sao Paulo taking a broadside salvo from the enemy battleship. Captain Duchamp of the Marseille had made the gut-wrenching decision of ordering the three destroyers to jump away to preserve his force before they became trapped by a damping field. For 40 anxious minutes, Boston and Marseille waited at the Hold One rendezvous point 2 light hours from the Globacus, fearing the Sao Paulo was lost. Then, the badly damaged third destroyer had arrived, having first made an almost blind jump as the enemy damping field grew stronger. Since the Sao Paulo rejoined the squadron, the three ships were engaged in damage control and triple-checking all critical systems. Boston had fared best of the three. Still, her crew was shaken up, and the ship had damage that needed to be fixed before the United Nations destroyer could be considered fully ready for combat again. Unfortunately, combat might not wait until Boston was ready. When he saw the Chesapeake Bay struck by enemy fire, the first thought to flash through his mind was relief that Irene was not aboard that ship. It might have been a selfish thought. It was also absolutely real. While Derek had wanted and been offered command of a destroyer, Irene insisted she wanted to keep flying. Sitting in a chair and telling pilots how to fly was simply not any fun, and Irene wasn't ready for what she considered partially a desk job. She had been appointed to command of the Chesapeake Bay's air group, a job that involved mostly paperwork. But the CAG still got to fly, and she couldn't quite understand how Derek could give up that dream. He didn't know where she was. From the distant Hold One rendezvous point, he couldn't see anything useful, and enemy jamming had caused the destroyer squadron to lose contact with all of the surviving dropships. He needed to get back to Globacus soon, or it would be too late. In his cramped office, Derek activated the comlink and saw that Captain Duchamp of the Marseille and Captain Souza of the Sao Paulo were already on. "Good, we can begin." Duchamp looked into the camera. He and Souza were captains by rank, one step above Derek's grade as lieutenant colonel. As the senior captain, Duchamp had command of the destroyer squadron. "Bonsu, what is your status?" "I would like another hour to swap out power conduits to one of the dorsal shield projectors, but we can go now. We don't need full combat capability." "Sir, I think we should go sooner than later. If the Theranin bombard the landing force..." "Sao Paulo is out of the fight," Souza interjected, his expression miserable. "We've lost a reactor. Engines are down to 15% thrust, and that hit on the starboard side took out 50 meters of outer hull, including 4 shield projectors and half of my point defense capability. The Beetle ship designer should not have clustered so many." "Emilio," Duchamp cut in. "That's an issue we can discuss later. Bonsu, I'm afraid Captain Souza is right. Sao Paulo can jump, but she's no good as a weapons platform. We'll have to..." "Excuse me, sir. I'm not sure that's true." "Bonsu, I appreciate your fighting spirit," Duchamp said without a smile. "We have to be realistic. 2 destroyers against the Theranin task force. The opposition has a battleship, 3 heavy cruisers, a pair of destroyers, and 5 frigates. That frigate we knocked out of orbit was a lucky shot." "Not so lucky for our people on the ground." Souza shook his head. "It fell right on top of a landing site. Of all the rotten luck." "This whole operation has been snake-bit from the beginning," Duchamp agreed. "The enemy has every advantage in this fight." "Sir, we have 2 advantages, Derek insisted. "And we have 3 destroyers. Sousa's lips drew into a hard line. "We lost 14 people over here. If you saw the damage to my ship, you wouldn't..." "The Sao Paulo can still fight," Derek insisted. "Sirs, listen to me, please. The enemy has greater firepower in directed energy and kinetic weapons, but our missiles were built by the Max-Ulks. We have Tier 1 missile technology the Theranin can't match. Our birds are stealthy, they are networked, hardened against jamming, more maneuverable than anything the Theranin have seen, and they are smart. Their AIs were reprogrammed and upgraded by Skippy. The Sao Paulo doesn't need to jump directly into the fight. You can jump into a standoff position, launch missiles, and jump away. The other advantage we have is our jump drives. We can focus our gamma ray bursts so the enemy will have great difficulty detecting where we jump to. That means we don't have to jump so far away after a raid. We can remain close enough that our sensors can keep a watch on the planet in almost real time.
Maybe. Duchamp raised his eyebrows. The fleet has been keeping our missiles for a rainy day.
Jacques, Sousa used the other captain's first name. If Sao Paulo doesn't have to get within Mesa range of the enemy, I want into this fight. I can't throw away my ship to make a grand gesture, but we are not sitting on the sidelines if we don't have to.
What are you thinking, Bonsu? Duchamp asked. A series of hit-and-run raids to keep the enemy from consolidating control in orbit?
Yes, but, sir, while we have the advantage of surprise, we should consider something more ambitious.
Like what?
Derek pulled sensor data from the fight and zoomed in on the Theranan battleship. Like, take out this big sumbitch first. We jumped back into the Klopeth system where most of the UN Navy was still licking its wounds from the fight with the senior species. The fight was more like a slaughter before Valkyrie arrived with a special party favor in the form of a dart traveling at relativistic speed. Anyway, Zhao had debated sending his undamaged ships away outside the system to preserve a ready combat capability, but decided to keep all his ships together. If the only ships in the system were cripples slowly being loaded aboard star carriers, they might prove to be tempting targets for any ambitious client species looking to make trouble. So Zhao kept a few combat-ready ships near the planet. The rest lurked in stealth a few light minutes away as a reserve. When we arrived, the last three ships were being maneuvered by tugs to latch onto star carriers. That included Zhao's former flagship, the battleship Pacific. Skippy had told me privately that even with the resources of the Ragnar shipyard, the mighty Pacific would be out of the fight for 6 months, possibly a year or more. With the damage so severe, it made sense to run the battleship through a full upgrade process rather than slapping together a quick set of repairs that the Navy would later regret. The problem was both the Ragnar and Jaguar shipyards were fully booked with basic maintenance and minimal upgrades to the patrol ships that ECO stole for us. So Zhao had tough choices to make. The only comfort I could give him was to explain that I expected both senior species to back down and ultimately either assist us in clearing the cloud at Earth or at least not interfere. We knew the Rindaloo had tentatively agreed to our deal, unofficially and without any mechanism to enforce the ceasefire. That was good enough for me. Now I had to hope the Maxalts saw the sense in not being the only species to defy us and have their access to the wormhole network cut off. Which we could not actually do because I am a lying sack of shit, remember? My point is, I did not expect the Navy to get into a major fight anytime soon. Or that's what I told Zhao. Maybe I was exaggerating the prospect of peace breaking out across the galaxy, but I have been wrong so many times that if Zhao listened to me, then it was his fault. Zhao quickly agreed to release the Flying Dutchman from picket duty, which saved me the awkwardness of recalling that ship for my special mission group. There was plenty of awkwardness to go around, as Emily Perkins was aboard Zhao's temporary flagship, the cruiser, Nile. When she heard we were headed for Globacus, she called me directly and requested to go with us. So did Jesse Coulter and Shauna Jarrett, both of them aboard the assault carrier Adriatic Sea. Damn it, I couldn't say no to them. It was only a short dropship flight over to Valkyrie, so I agreed the three Mavericks should come with us. There was someone else who requested to come aboard, and when I say requested, I am being polite about it. Margaret Adams interrupted me in the middle of saying a simple hello when I called her. "I'm coming with you," she announced. I could feel my face turning red. "It's customary to say hello first, you know."
"Hello. Now that we have the bullshit out of the way, get me a dropship."
"Please," she added, batting her eyelashes while scowling. Really, I had to give her marks for effort.
"Margaret, we don't even know..." "That's the point. You don't know what you will find at Globacus, so you need every resource you can get." Zhao can't spare any ships, and in a fight with the kiddies, the regular Navy would be useless anyway.
You haven't called me Joe. You also haven't said Sir or General. I'm a bit confused about where we... She bit her lip. I knew she was trying to control her temper.
You want to have this conversation now?
I want to have this conversation never.
Don't do this. I'm sorry. Sir, I was out of line. Request permission to...
Gunny, our ready bird is on its way to the Adriatic Sea. ETA is 11 minutes. Jared and Coulter are meeting the dropship in Bay... I checked my notes. Delta 5. I suggest you gear up and hurry.
Thank you. Bye.
My next call was with Chang. He had the Dutchman ready to move out. They had been planning a long flight to escort the Navy back to Ragnar. Coming with us only required programming a new course into the navigation system.
If the opposition is a task force of Theranin, Valkyrie can handle them, he told me.
But if the Maxalks are waiting for us, are you prepared to abandon the force on the planet? It won't come to that, I replied, and it sounded lame even to me. Joe, I know, wishful thinking.
On our second mission, my team was trapped at an Elder site on a moon, running out of air while Kristang warships prevented the old Dutchman version 1.0 from rescuing us. At the time, you were ready to leave us there to save the ship and continue the mission. So I know you can do it if needed.
I don't want to. Damn it. He was trying to help me by making sure I was mentally prepared ahead of time. I didn't want help. I wanted someone to tell me everything would be all right. Those Theranin are there because they got orders before we crashed the wormhole network. That changed the game. If the kiddies were planning to ambush Valkyrie again, they'd have to be crazy to try it now. No, Kong, we're just being careful. I really don't think the Maxalks are stupid enough to do that again.